Judge Oliver Wanger.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, Mayor Autry. Good to see all of you. What a great country we have, where speech, public disclosure, and education are guaranteed by the First Amendment. Where else can a chief executive of a top-tier city, I've just heard, and a member of the judicial branch of the government come together, share ideas, discuss issues of common concern? I start with a disclaimer that I speak individually, not as a member of the United States courts. The views I express are my own and are attributed to no one and to no institution. The beginning point for our discussion, role of the courts in society, starts with our recollection of what we learned in high school civics. The three branches of government are comprised of two constituted entirely in the highest executive positions of elected officials. The third branch, our branch of government, the judiciary, there are no elected officials. We are nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate of the United States, and we do not serve at the will of the people. We do not make decisions based on popular notions. We don't take votes to decide how cases should be decided. Rather, the court is guided by principles that are well established and well known. And we've all learned about the three R's. Let me suggest to you that there are 10 R's that typify the function and the role of the judiciary. And let me go through them now, and then we will turn to another subject. The court's mission, its obligation, and the responsibility of every judge of the United States starts with integrity and loyalty to the oath that each of us take to uphold the Constitution of our nation and to judge to the best of our ability. The first R is that judges are obligated to be respectful. Courts must listen. Judges must be patient, they must be courteous, they must be understanding. Judges are to be temperate. They're not to infringe or usurp. We don't cut people off, we don't talk over people. Rather, we hope that we're never rude, never arrogant, never condescending. The second R is reasonable. The judge's role is to apply the facts and the law to decide on a principled basis and to provide an explanation for every decision that is made. The third R, responsible. Judges are committed by oath to follow the law. That means that judges can't substitute their views for what the law requires, and as I tell every jury we pick in the process of jury selection, as a judge, I make decisions every year out of thousands that I don't agree with, that I don't like, that I wouldn't make if it were up to me to say what the law is, but it's not. I'm not elected to do that. That, in our tripartite system of government, is what the legislature does. And you elect them, and they're accountable to you. And if you don't like the law, it can be changed because the legislature has that authority and function. Being responsible means we don't substitute our personal views. The next R, courts should be rational. The court's decision should make sense under the law and facts, which underlie and justify any judgment or order that's issued. We should not be arbitrary. Judges should not be capricious, meaning unprincipled or unthinking. Judges are restrained, meaning that the court does not decide cases where a party lacks standing, meaning that there's no actual controversy, or there isn't anything real that the court can decide, or effective relief that can be given. Courts that are non-justiciable cases cannot be decided, as political questions cannot be decided. The judiciary has no competence to make political decisions for the nations. That's why we elect our leaders, and we don't give advisory opinions. It might be nice to know what the law is in a particular subject, but that's not the job of the courts, to issue opinions when there is no real and actual controversy. Courts are reflective, meaning we don't prejudge, we don't come with an agenda. We're not liberal, we're not conservative, we're not looking to establish anything. There's no case that any judge ever wants to try. Rather, the judge is an impartial, neutral, and fair-minded decision maker. Restrained. A judge should not ever want to hear any case, should not go beyond the issues presented by the pleadings and the parties, and should only decide matters necessary to the decision. Reliable. A judge is obligated to respect higher courts, to respect the legislature, to respect the executive, to follow precedent, to observe the rule of stare decisis, to ensure, by doing so, reliability and predictability, so that our nation can order its affairs based on what courts do. A court is reactive, not activist. What is an activist judge? An activist judge is a judge with an agenda, a judge who doesn't follow the law, a judge who knows better than everybody else, who wants to make decisions a particular way. Judges aren't elected to do that. Judges don't make law. They provide explanations for how and why the law requires a particular result, and that's the end of it. Finally, judges are remedial. The judge prescribes and awards by judgment the remedy the law provides, unless we are in an area where, called equity, the law doesn't provide fixed standards. The law is inadequate. Where a remedy is inadequate, then one has to be fashioned. Where the harm is irreparable, where the public interest is at stake, the judge is not free to usurp the function of government. The judge isn't free, again, to do anything but narrowly tailor remedy. And I know there has been comment, and Mayor Autry has commented, on decisions that have been made in the 37 water cases that have been in my court since 1991. And what I can tell you is this, without going from womb to tomb in history, the current remedies that are in place were reached only after an 8-day trial where all parties were invited to propose what remedies will do the minimum of dislocation and yet comply with the law and achieve what the law requires. We heard from fishery biologists, from hydrologists, from engineers, from the operators of the projects. We heard from environmentalists. We heard from farmers. We heard from every constituency that has anything to say about how water is allocated in California, and we did the best we could under the circumstances. Now, shall we get to the mayor? Did you think I wouldn't? Let's start with the positive, because there is so much that is positive. The mayor is charismatic. The mayor is a leader. He has a positive budget surplus. He has a 70% approval rating. And I think I just said we have one of the few budgetary surpluses in the state, perhaps in the nation. The suggestion that I lack respect or that in any way I have any adverse feelings toward the mayor is simply untrue. I have total respect and I have affection for the mayor because I'm entertained by him. He is a celebrity. And my lot in life is look around the west side and you'll see wanted posters. And the face on those is mine. That's not by choice. Now, what can we do? I have two areas, with your indulgence, Mr. Moderator, and take it off the other end of my time.
Judge, if I could interrupt for you. Yes. Just, it's my unenviable job to remind a federal judge that he's almost out of time.
Thank you. Okay. I call this the rule of the three sergeants, because I remind everybody, and I'm going to suggest to the mayor, Sergeant Joe Friday gave us the rule to live by, just the facts, ma'am. It's been suggested by an eminent an eminent journalist of editorial stature in this community that Sergeant Bubba Skinner learned the law in that capacity. And then there is a third sergeant, Sergeant Ollie Wanger, an E5 buck sergeant in the United States Marine Corps Reserve, where at MCRD boot camp and the Advanced Infantry Training Regiment, I learned all about life. And that has guided me through my life. Now, let's talk about three areas that we want to focus on. And this has to do with the relationship and the respective roles of government. Two cases. The homeless case. I'm going to give you three statements, public statements, that were issued by the city of Fresno and the mayor, and I'm going to make some humble suggestions in respect to these. The first was that this was an advisory statement regarding the settlement in the Kincaid case, with the caveat no additional comments will be made with regard to this case. This white-collar exploitation of the homeless by the court and the lawyers is unconscionable. I'm calling upon the ACLU and Judge Wanger to require half of the exorbitant lawyer fees of $750,000 to be donated to homeless programs. No additional comments will be made with regard to this case. Now, as a result of that, Mayor Autry was an individual defendant in the case, meaning that the court had jurisdictional authority because there had been a settlement where all of these were the terms that were in writing and each party had signed it. When that was issued, shortly after a preliminary approval for the final settlement in the case was given, I did not know because we had called a jury. We had over 200 people called to come to the courthouse the next Tuesday to start the jury trial. And although I was being told by the lawyers that the case was settled, this was a clear indication that there was unhappiness, that there was, in effect, disagreement with the principle of the settlement. And then a second statement was made, and that was, again, in the newspaper. Mayor Autry said that he called upon the judge not only to reduce the amount of the fees, but also to explain how such fees could be justified. Under the law, that settlement was the parties, the homeless plaintiffs and the city of Fresno and Caltrans as defendants. The court didn't participate in the settlement. The court didn't sign the settlement. The court ultimately, because it was a class action, had to approve the settlement. But as some of you know, and most of you don't, that's the only function and role that the court plays. We were ready to try that case. Now, as to the attorney's fees, that's why the mayor came to court and he told us about the Soviet Union. He told us about the rights of free speech. And it was the court's obligation and my pleasure to see that he was able to do so. And he said everything that he wanted to say, and he was treated courteously and with respect, as anybody in my court is treated. On the issue of the attorney's fees were fixed by the parties in their settlement agreement that they signed. The court had no role in it. The court has to approve the amount of attorney's fees as a settlement, but when the evidence came in, the mayor stated in the paper, I'm calling upon the judge to explain, and after the approval was announced, he said the judge still hasn't explained. Is that true? The answer is the mayor wasn't at either one of these hearings, at the preliminary hearing or the final approval, and I spent 20 minutes reviewing the law and explaining why the approximately $2.7 million of actual hours conferred under the Lodestar standards that govern the calculation and the quantification of attorney's fees, the $750,000 was essentially about 30 cents on the dollar. The lead law firm in the case, Heller Ehrman, took zero.
Judge, I'm reluctant to interrupt.
I understand.
But your 12 minutes has stretched now to 15, and in fairness, we really must.
And I'm gonna scoot behind you and cede to the mayor.
Mr. Mayor, if you would, please. I probably should have explained this at the outset. If either of our speakers today was to not use their full 12-minute allotment, it would be added to the other end. The other side of that coin is if either of our speakers goes over on their opening statements, then obviously we're going to have to take that out of the rebuttal time. So that's how we'll do it. Mr. Mayor, you have 12 minutes.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank the group here for putting this on. It is really unusual, really exciting thing to do. And I agree with Judge Wenger. I think it's a great show of what this country is all about when you have a sitting judge and a sitting mayor not afraid to get up and talk about their disagreements. And that's what makes this country great. And thank you for your service to this country, Judge Wenger. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. One of my biggest regrets is I didn't serve our country. I was 301 on the lottery, and I didn't enlist. And those folks back in Vietnam era can relate to that. And one of my best friends, I go see him every time I go to Washington because he's up on that monument. And he gave his all for freedom, Gary Dent, bless his heart. But again, thank you for your service. Very interesting things that the judge has to say, and I'm not saying that with my tongue anywhere near my cheek. It's informative. He's an honest man. I served this state very, very well, country well, and I know doing the best that he can from his perspective to make the best decisions. I never doubted that. But, you know, as I said when I was invited to come see him in his courtroom one time, that there's the world that we live in, and it's the world that we wished we lived in. You know, I have a unique perspective on the whole constitutional situation, the role of courts in society, such that broad subject that we're talking about today, is open to interpretation, as is the Constitution. But I think what gets missed so often in court rulings in terms of interpreting the Constitution is the other document that came before it that is inextricably connected to, and I think supersedes more important than the Constitution because it gave birth to the Constitution. And that is our Declaration of Independence when Thomas Jefferson said, all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, of which are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. All men. Now, the Constitution was put together to serve that mission statement. The Bill of Rights, all 10 of the original Bill of Rights, were put in place to ensure every man had life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, it wasn't a perfect document. Some people think it should be literally stay the way it is. Others believe it's a living document. And some of the amendments that we've added, thank goodness we've added. 1954 decision, Brown versus Board of Education, ended the demonizing of our school system by ending separate but equal by law. Now it's still alive in other forms. Roe versus Wade, some will think that was good for the country. Others may think that that was a states' right issue. That's still being debated today. But again, I think it's a key concept that was in that declaration that should be at the forefront of every single decision when there's confusion. It's what you go back to. It's the purity of purpose that our founding fathers had put in place. And that brings us to just, in this case, the two decisions that we were talking about, because I think they, especially, both of them, the homeless issue and the ruling on the Endangered Species Act, which ordered the court to act, by the way. I think there's this myth that precedent, once it is set in a court decision, cannot be overturned. We've heard it all the time. I've heard it over the 8 years. Well, a precedent's been set here, this court, precedent's been set here. And it's very clear in our history that that has not been the case. In fact, you know, you learn as time goes on. The Plessy versus Ferguson decision in 1896 in the Supreme Court, in which a fellow named Homer Plessy actually got together with the railroads to overturn Jim Crow's separate but equal laws because they thought the railroads thought it was too expensive. And they got Homer Plessy, who was actually a Creole. He looked white, but they were going to put him on the train because by law, the train should have provided a separate car but equal to the whites. Now, the reason they didn't put a man whose skin was noticeably black is they felt that the people there would just beat him up and throw him off the train. So to make this thing work out, to get it into court, they had to pick the right guy. It was Homer Plessy. Well, they came and arrested him. They were in cahoots on this, got it before the Supreme Court, and they lost. Separate but equal was kept in place by the Supreme Court. When you flash forward to 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, they referenced the Plessy versus Ferguson case, and they did it not under the premise that the 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law, which most folks thought they were going to hang their hat on totally. They didn't do that. They said the fundamental circumstances and public opinion had changed in such in terms of education as it did and for rights of separate but equal as it was in 1896. That was a very, very big admission and new precedent for courts. It was also used in 1992 when Planned Parenthood versus Casey, in which they referenced the different environment that was present today as opposed, and the facts had changed. Now, that's really important because they went out and said changed circumstances may impose new obligations. Now, that's right out of the Planned Parenthood versus Casey case in 1992. Now, another interesting case, said President, was the 1937 case of the West Coast Hotel, which the judge made a ruling that you can introduce economic factors and theories, nationally or internationally, as a basis for making your decision. And they did. They used it in that case. And I'm getting to this point. A judge has always had, courts have always had the ability for a judge to use what they call judicial notice. Basically, they can bring in and listen to facts and weigh facts that are either clearly truthful or there's a preponderance of evidence that they are truthful. And it's always been available to judges to declare a judicial notice. I'm going to take a look at these. For example, let's use an example, 9/11. The terrorist action happened on 9/11. You can use that, even if it's not submitted into the record by the lawyers. You're giving that judge, in other words, what I look at it, it lets a judge use some common sense. And thank goodness for that. You don't want to be constricted in this document that we're still fighting over, the meaning of this and that in the Constitution. And again, it's the best form of government. Somebody said our democracy is the worst form of government ever invented by man except all the rest. And I believe that. But my point being that this whole notion that you're tied in, you're locked in, a judge cannot use the common sense to weigh factors that are out there, especially when you're talking about a passage of time, one decade, two decades, three decades. Which brings me, I know my time's getting short, so I want to be able to get some take, give and take with the judge here. Brings me his decision on the decision to have the biggest release, or actually depriving of water to farmers and people, of which all men are created equal. Those documents were meant to protect the welfare of man, not fish. And I'm an environmentalist. But that facts are the facts, Judge, they are the facts. And when this water was cut off, 50%, the largest cutoff of water delivery in the history of this state was done. It was based on a document that was treated with infallibility, the Endangered Species Act, which was created by Congress, not by the Supreme Court, in 1973. So 35 years later, when you had a water system that was meant to provide water for 18 million people, now you're talking about 38 million people. The water system was for 18 million people, folks. 38 million in the state now. These are facts that the judge had the judicial notice power to consider. Now, you combine that with the West Coast Hotel case, which specifically brought economic impact upon people as a factor that must be considered and can be considered with every decision. That was at the judge's disposal, and it's been at the disposal of judges for the last 10, 20, 30 years, and they have not used it, while the ACLU has run a reign of terror on American values in this country since 1920. Now, we'll get into that case about the homeless, but the ACLU's history clearly should have been under judicial notice. When you come out in 1920, Roger Baldwin started this thing, an avowed agnostic and socialist, who said, I'm going to go out and try to take God out of this country, and I'm going to go in and make pornographic materials available to everybody, including your children, and I'm going to defend the rights of child molesters around this country, and the ACLU has done that. Time after time after time, they assault every display, Christmas display in the country. They tell the Boy Scouts you can't have God as a core component of your organization, and you have to let in folks that are avowed to be partaking in homosexual behavior. And whether you agree with that or not, is that the right role of the courts? So fundamentally, we disagree on how the Constitution is interpreted. The judicial notice powers that were available to this judge to not do what he did in terms of the water situation, because the economic devastation that was clearly caused on some of the poorest of the poor on the West Side, and which the 14th Amendment says you do not have the right, government, to deprive somebody of life, liberty, and property, all three were violated when he let that, when he kept that water back with no regard for the human consequences. So in closing, again, it baffles me. This is a congressional act, not even another Supreme Court decision that you're dealing with. And again, if you want to make a constitution to declare life, pursuit of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for fish, go ahead. But it's underlining, it's unconstitutional. The Endangered Species Act is unconstitutional openly. You cannot do anything to protect a fish if human beings are injured, hurt, and their rights violated. Thank you, Bud.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate it. Judge Wanger. We had reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal. But keeping in mind that we'd also like to reserve a little bit of time for questions, and this is the lunch hour, I would ask both of our speakers, if they are able to return a balance of that time, that would be a good thing, so we can take some questions.
I just want to make sure, Bud, that I get a chance to respond to the homeless situation. I got focused on the Endangered Species Act because there's so many people that are suffering right now under this ruling. But if I could respond in enough time to do that, would be great.
Sure.
I am astounded by what I just heard. I thought our mayor was a conservative, and I think I just heard probably the strongest support for a living constitution, not a strict constructionist or traditionalist view of the constitution, that I believe would be a manifesto of persons the mayor doesn't agree with. But let's address the issues raised. The ESA has been held constitutional by the Supreme Court of the United States. The authority, the Tennessee Valley Authority case, simply says that in balancing hardships and equity, Congress, not the people, not judges, the elected representatives of our nation, have determined that species are irreplaceable. That value requires a judge not to balance, not to prioritize, and to, in effect, apply the law and protect the species. Now, is it right? It's producing results that are catastrophic and that are unprecedented. It wasn't 50% of the water supply. It's a little less than 30%, and that's in a drought year with a critically dry year this year, followed by this year. We don't know what next year is going to be. But what is very simply true is that the concept that judicial notice could bear or have any role in this, again, you and I didn't go to the same law school, and your lawyers didn't go to the same law school. Judicial notice is provided for under Federal Rule of Evidence 201. It essentially states that when facts or matters are so undisputed that they can be judicially noticed because there is no controversy, judicial notice can be taken. But if there is any room for disagreement, if there's any room for debate or question, you can't take judicial notice. That isn't the power a judge has or would use in making any decision. I quite frankly don't know where that comes from, because it doesn't even make sense legally. And I'm not holding the mayor to the standard of a lawyer or a judge. He has said that the judge didn't use common sense. What the judge did and must do is to follow his oath and apply the law using all the common sense that he has. But sometimes, as I said, the law doesn't permit the use of common sense because it dictates a result. What is the remedy? Change the law. Congressman Radanovich has a bill in to essentially exempt California in times of drought from the ESA. Maybe it'll pass. Let's hope it does. But the bottom line is, how do you change that? It would be an abdication of judicial function and responsibility. Again, something I don't think the mayor believes in, but when a judge doesn't follow the law, when a judge doesn't follow the Constitution, when the judge uses the Declaration of Independence, what's the judge doing? The judge is now an activist. And as I understand it, the Conservative Manifesto says, what is the greatest danger to our society? Activist judges. And so that I don't understand. I agree that the Declaration of Independence says man and the rights of man. Today, I think it's woman and man, and the rights of everybody in our society should be protected. And when I look at a statement that precedent is not to be valued, that we should not essentially follow the rules of interpretation that the Supreme Court prescribes for us, again, that would be judicial activism. It would be judicial irresponsibility. It would be essentially abdicating the judicial function. The statement about economic impact and the hotel case, again, absolutely irrelevant, having nothing to do when the Supreme Court has said under ESA cases, economic impacts cannot be considered. That's the end of the road. And so it's not for the judge to say, it's not for the judge to make the law and to change the law and be irresponsible. The judge's duty always is to follow the law. And if the result is unconscionable and if it's unfair, there are higher courts who have that authority. But we are as bound to protect the public and protect the public interest. As we know, the mayor talked about the kinds of crimes under the federal sentencing guidelines, under mandatory minimum sentencing, areas of interest currently, such as child pornography. The sentences are beyond what those who are being sentenced expect. They are necessary. Congress has declared it a national priority. But again, it is for our elected representatives, not appointed judges, to say what the law should be and how it should be ultimately interpreted. And so I think that...
2 minutes, Judge.
That's my time. Okay. Well, I took five in front, and I want the mayor to have his say because he didn't get a chance to
All
talk
right.
about the homeless.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Judge. And again, sorry I wasn't politically correct. I think that man, as it is in the Bible, meant man, woman. It's so... no intention to demean women by saying all men. Of course, I meant all women. I have two daughters. Give me a break. You know, the judge, I believe, also has a responsibility to rule unlawful if a law is clearly unlawful. And if you do buy the concept, if you do embrace the fact that the Declaration of Independence, in its very first words, before it outlined all of the grievances and all the violations against life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness that King George imposed on the colonies, you'll clearly see that that is the document of which the Constitution and Bill of Rights came out of. And the fact of the matter is, the Plessy versus Ferguson case and the Brown versus Board of Education, there was a change in circumstances and judicial notice was used. Now, if I'd use your term, if you don't want judicial notice, then get it out of the law. But it's there to be used to ensure that common sense rules today, not strict legalistic things that will allow an agenda to move forward, which is exactly what the ACLU has used, the strict interpretation of the law. If you had a strict interpretation of the law, and this is the way it is, we wouldn't have had the amendments that we have. We wouldn't need judges. You have a judiciary because the founding fathers knew there would be arguments, there would be different ways of viewing this great thing called the Constitution. Now, again, I go back to the world we live in and the world we wished we live in. Why do you think, you know, the people are so focused on the presidential election? Sure, we have war on terrorism. Sure, the economy. Sure, the most powerful individual in the world is going to be elected on November 4th. But it's also going to appoint Supreme Court justices. And it's politically driven. Surprise? People come to a judgeship just like they come to anything else in their life with a set of values and principles that are going to guide their decision. A judge is no different. Now, we wish they were rote robots that you could program them not to be affected by how they were raised, by what their daddy told them and their mama told them and what they experienced in life, and they could put on a robe and go on that and put all that behind them and rule on the Constitution just down the line. That is not the world we live in. And when you're living in a world that is being decimated, has been decimated, with our values under attack, our water being taken away by decisions that clearly could have, if used judicial notice and common sense, and taken in consideration, would not be wrought upon us, then maybe it would be a different story. But sometimes you have to fight fire with fire. It is what it is. You have somebody, an entity called the ACLU, with $350 million descending on Fresno, saying, you had better give us a bunch of money or we're going to bust you. Now, the fact, I don't know how much time we got, but I'm going to get into the homeless case a little bit. Because some very serious accusations were sent my way, including the first words that I heard in the press was that the city of Fresno conduct themselves in a dishonest and demeaning way to the homeless. Now, those are pretty serious accusations, Judge. Now, that was the first salvos that I heard based on limited information. Dishonest and demeaning. I've lived most of my life, when I was a child, one step away from being homeless. My dad was a migrant farm laborer. I know what it was to go to bed and think that I was going to wake up the next morning. We didn't have rich aunts and uncles to move in with. So be called dishonest and demeaning in dealing with some of the most helpless people out there. I did get my short hairs up, and I do today. The fact of the matter is, the reality is, and I wish judicial notice would have been used here, that this organization with $350 million in the bank came in here, took this situation, spent, I don't know what the hours they billed the court. I don't, Jim Betts, I don't know what our bill was, but it wasn't near what they originally asked for, $1.5 million, I believe it was. And we settled for $860,000. They used these folks. It was clear that they were using them. Now, he says, why did you sign off on it? Let me tell you why. I swore an oath to protect this city against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And ACLU, I believe, is the enemy of this country. I'll say it right now. Unless they change their ways, and I don't think they will, they have caused more damage in this country than you can calculate. They came to Fresno. We're getting in the midst of this thing. We had videotape that showed a homeless person having a cart ripped from their fingers. The truth was, it wasn't a homeless person. It was an activist that came in to the person. He took it away. The fact of the matter is, we did go in. I went in personally. I'm the only guy that went to this encampment the night before, explained to the folks what was happening. You could not believe the conditions there. It was what was supposed to be a urinal that we're supposed to save was so full of disease, and it was a coffee can. It was stuff that you wouldn't let a dog, the conditions a dog live in. Right around the corner was the rescue mission and help, a shower, food, medicine, hope. They were on Caltrans land, and right across the street, mind you, from a family that had little girls playing outside that saw every day these people come out, shoot up, you know, I mean, having sex, and I won't get into the other stuff, in front of these kids and that family. So you have people encamping illegally in a health hazard with little children watching them sell drugs, have sex, relieve themselves. What about the rights of that little child and those people across the street? So I made a decision, after informing them, to move.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to wrap it up. 1 minute.
I'm going to wrap it up. Now, we get to the settlement phase, which seems to be under dispute. Why'd you sign off on it, Autry? Well, quite frankly, I know we've done pretty good fiscally. Here, we've done our best. $17 million in bank sounds like a lot. Not a lot with the problems we're dealing with. We're in a very poor community. We have to bite and scratch for every dollar. You have a situation now where a judge has said already you've treated him in a demeaning and dishonest way. So, you know, things aren't looking too good. But I know he hasn't made up his mind about Fresno's intentions, right? So I got to huddle with folks and make a decision on whether to settle out of court with these folks or have 15, 20 attorneys with a limitless budget come down with a judge who's already said we're demeaning and dishonest and try to win that thing. But I did know we had one hope, because the judge did have a role in that he didn't mention. When we signed that agreement, I still held out hope, because the judge has to rule that agreement is fair, equitable, and reasonable. My hope was when this judge saw this exorbitant amount of money that the ACLU was ripping this city off and using these people for, that he would have said, you know what, this is unreasonable. Using common sense, knowing the full history of the ACLU, knowing the city is outmanned, outgunned, knowing that every mayor this side of the Mississippi and east would have done the same thing I did, I was hoping very naively, quite honestly, that maybe the court system would look at this and say, you know, this isn't right. But I was wrong. Okay? But don't think that I signed something and then sent it off to the judge and then just started barking like I'm some schizophrenic or something. You know, I know what I did. And I was hoping the judge would look that, underline that word reasonable. Anybody would think $850,000 for something that was totally talked about out of court. And I'll tell you one thing, last comment. I saw these so-called caring lawyers running from the homeless once this was settled. They couldn't get out of town fast enough. They left these poor people crying on the side of the road, tugging at these lawyers, and them yanking their arms away trying to get into a limo and get out of town. They came in, they used this city, they ripped the homeless off, they made a fool and a mockery of the judicial system, and we're paying the price for it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Our original purpose this afternoon was to try and conclude the entire debate during the lunch hour, but I've noticed that nobody's leaving, and we're past the lunch hour. So maybe we could add another round. I think the judge maybe would like to respond to that. And so can we add another layer?
Yes.
Can we go 2 minutes apiece?
Yes. Two
and
minutes.
Then we'll have some questions.
I'll be very brief. Three major points. The Declaration of Independence is a magnificent document. It is the history of our nation. It is the cornerstone of our freedoms and liberty. It's not the Supreme Court, it is not the supreme law of our land. The Constitution of the United States is the Supreme Court of the supreme law of our land. That is what dictates, that is what we interpret, that is what we follow. With regard to the homeless case, 2 points. The court's description of the facts of the case were based on essentially a procedure that the city had adopted following the recommendation of a corporal that was apparently never vetted by any attorneys or any people higher in authority, that notice would be given, the trucks would move, and everything that was on the street would be seized and destroyed in a dumpster. This included the ashes of a person, false teeth, documents, the last lock of hair of a child. What we learned was this. And what I said was, the city came in and said, we follow the law. That was false. We have no resources to deal with their property. We cannot store it. We cannot hold it. We don't have enough money. We can't deal with it. That was false. And the way the homeless were treated in the street by the people who were seizing and destroying their property in front of them was demeaning. And so I simply described what those facts were. My order said, don't do it. Don't immediately take and destroy property. Enforce the law. Stop prostitution. Nobody can use drugs. Arrest everybody in sight. Dispossess. Use unlawful detainer. Get everybody off of private property. Nobody suggested that the laws of the United States, the state, and the city of Fresno shouldn't be followed, and they were followed. The only entity that wasn't following the law was the city of Fresno. Why? I can't tell you, because they could have called L.A., they could have called San Francisco, they could have called anyone of all the major cities in the United States and learned what policies they were using. This case has been litigated in Tampa, Florida, in Seattle, Washington, all over the nation. They're all in published decisions.
Judge, that's 2 minutes.
All right. There's no question about the lawfulness.
Well, I'm glad there's no gavel in your hand now, Judge, because now it's not my time. We followed the law. That's why there's been no lawsuits against us in that regard. Jim Sanchez, our attorney, Jim Betts, we went through this thing. The letter of the law was followed. And I guess one could say a used hypodermic needle that had been used on somebody who obviously had AIDS that a little child could come by and pick up at any time and play with should be picked up and viewed as property and stored. If it means being hauled in by a judge, if I pick that hypodermic up and destroy it, I'm going to do it because that little kid's welfare is more important. This is what I'm talking about, this common sense that seemed has evaporated in this country to a great degree, especially in the courts. I have the highest respect for Judge Wenger. That's why I'm so hopping mad. It's incongruent to the other decisions that he's made. I don't know. You talk about conservative. I don't think it's conservative or liberal. It's just common sense and a common understanding, and I disagree with you about the Declaration of Independence. That inalienable right that we all have, the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, gave birth to that Constitution, the Bill of Rights. If we have no Declaration, we have no Bill of Rights. We have no Constitution. And the fact of the matter is, we went through all of that stuff, and I don't want to get into the gory detail. First of all, it's stuff that was brought in on property that they did not own, Caltrans property. It was illegal for this encampment to be there. It was a health hazard for this camp to be there to begin with. So to say something is personal property and then to believe a group saying that they had a lock of hair of a child, I was there. I went around that entire encampment, and my biggest regret, maybe I should have stepped forward a little sooner. I thought common sense would have it. Maybe I should have brought the media with me, but I didn't want to make it look like it was grandstanding. I went out there, and I saw what was out there, and every single one of you would have been appalled and said, Mayor, why are you letting these people live like this? Why are you subjecting them to this? And if you call that property, as I said, mattresses with everything from E. coli to hepatitis.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to have to stop you there.
Hanging up. That's property that should be. I would ask this, would the court mandate and pay for the hazmat suits that would have to be used to pick that stuff up and go store it?
That's 2 minutes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not sure if another layer would get us to where we want to go. So maybe we could open up the floor to some questions. Is that acceptable? That was the original plan.
If we could each have one more minute, I think there is something
that needs to
be said.
Judge, you can each have one more minute.
Now, Judge, you're taking judicial notice of this.
That's right. And that'll
and
take
I
us,
don't know if you think that's constitutional.
Though. That'll take us right up to 4 o'clock. but yes, please.
We have aired our views. We have a great opportunity, Mayor, and that is our willingness to avoid hyperbole, demagoguery, not to oversimplify. Let's get the facts. Let's understand the law. Let's make the best decisions. We have a common purpose. You and I serve the public. We care about this community and our state. And mutually, although we are in totally different realms, we have the same objectives. God bless you.
God bless you. And let me thank you. God bless you, Judge. And I said this, too, and I will always have the utmost respect for Judge Wenger, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the judge. It was his call. Judges don't do that. To step out like this, that's why he's got my... Yeah, we disagree vehemently on a couple of issues, big issues. And that's the American way. But I respect him so much, and I told the folks who came, I said, Judge Wenger's going to do that? Now, I always respect it, but to make this step, you know, to get out from the robe, to get out from the bench, from behind the bench, and come here in an open forum, it's unprecedented. I am so proud to be in a city that has you here and this kind of courage. So I tip my hat to you for being here.
Ladies and gentlemen, this really is a unique opportunity to ask questions of either one of our gentlemen this afternoon. So please, if you have a question, would you please stand and make it as loud as you possibly can so everyone can hear?
The mic.
A lot of cases that the judge has ruled. Do you read his opinions and his rulings before you comment publicly?
Well, as I say, I read the abridged, the salient points. I don't get into every small detail of it. So things that are going to make the action happen or not happen. That's what
it. We do actually look at the opinion.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We look at the major parts of it. Absolutely. What do you think? It's just something I didn't even look at. Hey, I ain't the brightest chrome on the bumper. That's why I got to read things. Yeah, no. What was your point? Yes, I read. Is there a follow-up point to it?
No, I just, when you said we, I thought you consulted your lawyers. But you personally read the opinion?
I read the, if it depends on the length of the opinion, if it's 150 pages.
That's what they are.
Yeah. Yeah, they're about that. Hey, but you're still short of the bailout plan, 450. So you're doing well there. Yeah, we get the highlights. My staff does a great job, Georgianne White, Andy Souza, Jim Betts in this case, of keeping me abreast on the major points of this, so, and that's how I go about things.
Sir?
Are you being active with Congressman Radonovich in trying to make a deception happen with
the PA? Yeah, absolutely. Unless something is done to modify, not do away with, modify the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, and I'm going to go into it right now, the Clean Air Act. These documents, well-intentioned, are just destroying the state and having a big impact around the country. So, yes, if it doesn't look good that it's going to pass, but simply bringing it forward is a huge step. People run like scalded dogs. They're afraid if they go up against the ESA, oh, you don't care about the environment. And you know what? The ACLU will spend money to have you defeated if you just pop up. It's unbelievable what this organization will do, and they're more funded now than they ever have been before. So I really admire and respect George Radonovich for bringing this up, because we need to keep doing that to bring awareness to the flaws in this legislation and how it's crippling us here in the Valley. Well, we received notices in appropriate fashion along the way, and we did what we were required to do. Again, you do exactly what you're required to do, but I felt we were doing, and still to this day, you can never do enough for the homeless, but we were doing things in this city that people didn't realize, and that's my fault, and the media hadn't picked up on. This whole cleanup, they wanted to say, oh, this invasion. You know, again, my biggest regret, I didn't have the media there, because all of these things that the judge ruled on were categorically false. They could say that this stuff here, I gave them forewarning, we were coming in, come around the corner, there's the rescue mission, we're bringing in the health department, you need some medicine from living here. People were hacking and coughing and diarrhea. I mean, you couldn't believe it. In their pants, in excrement, it was the most unbelievable thing I'd ever seen. And I was ashamed that I'd let them stay there that long. And we gave them ample notice. Time wasn't an ally. People were sick there. It was bad, real bad. So, again, when you're asking me, when you were noticed you were violating, again, whatever we were required to do, we were doing. But we were doing so much more already, and we'll continue with our 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. Show you how seriously we take this. So at the end, you know, You know, God's controlling everything. What man meant for evil, God meant for good. But I tell you one thing, the ACLU's intentions were to come here, use this, build up their treasury, and get out of town as fast as possible. Their best image they ever saw was Fresno in a rearview mirror and all those homeless people that they put on the line saying, call me anytime, here's my card. All those poor people had these cards. You think those phone numbers work now? Give me a break.
Yes, sir.
The argument was not advanced and not addressed. It's up to the parties to do that. The court sua sponde, in light of clear and unambiguous Supreme Court authority holding the act constitutional, follows the law.
Yes, ma'am. Way back by the window in the corner.
In what way, Hilda? And if I feel people are being exploited, those that don't have a voice, who think they're going to be given $500, $600 once they, with no oversight, they say there's going to be oversight. They're going to force that. They're going to go out and OD. They're going to be dead in the alleyway. They don't have a voice, Hilda. So if I stepped on some toes to save a life, I'll make that trade-off any day. Go ahead, your question. I just had to respond.
Absolutely. We had a jury trial set for Tuesday. The jury was still on call. It had not been called off. We had to have an answer. The lawyers were telling me in court the case was settled. Within an hour, the press release was issued criticizing the settlement, particularly the attorney's fees aspect of it, which was an agreement. And so I didn't notice an OSC Ray contempt. I wasn't heavy-handed. I let the mayor have his say, speak, and explain. And I was able to understand. I was totally dispassionate. I was courteous. And as I told the mayor then, I respect you, Mayor Autry. I respect your office. As the chief executive of the city of Fresno, I'd just like an explanation so we know whether to call a jury and to have a jury trial. And it was Tuesday. It would have started Wednesday. That was my only purpose. No emotion, no other reaction.
And I need to chime in here, too, It happened exactly the way the judge said. There's a lot of folks thinking he was just going to use this to vent. Folks told me, well, you're going to really get it. And he didn't. He allowed me to come in and speak my mind on things. And I said some things in terms of exploitation. We disagreed. The judge took it as me saying that he had done something illegal. Now, I never meant illegal. And I don't mean that. And please take this the right way, Judge. I'm not calling you immoral, but I'm not. But it's a difference between a decision being unintentionally immoral and being illegal and accusing the court of engaging in criminal behavior. I did not make that accusation. Exploiting of people is not right, but in many cases it's not illegal. It just may, in some instances, you know, it can be, but I sure didn't, exploit illegal aliens and you're having illegal labor, they're working for you, you're exploiting, but you're engaging in legal activity by employing them.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have time for one more question. Yes, sir.
Well, you got exactly what I said earlier, and we kind of ran through it, so I'll clarify. There's the world we live in and the world we wished we lived in. You're not going to outgun, outspend the ACLU. They don't bring forth lawsuits to lose. The judge had already called the actions demeaning and dishonest. Okay? I mean, the cards were stacked against us. Now, you expect me to go out and spend tens, I don't know the price tag, but it would run maybe the tens of millions of dollars in a city that simply can't afford it. I would have loved to have had a war chest behind this city that said, hey, go get them. Because we would have. I think we would have had a good day in court. But we couldn't risk that of bankrupting the city on a case that clearly I felt at the time the judge had already some foregone conclusions about in terms of his belief about Fresno and how we conducted ourselves, and then the war chest of the ACLU. So I swallowed hard and said, you know, we got one shot. And that's the judge seeing that this is unreasonable, knowing that we had the gun to our head by the ACLU, knowing the circumstances that were in play, and it would deem this settlement in terms of attorney's fees outlandish. I mean, doesn't it jump out at you? How many times did you meet with the homeless? Not very many. They came down here once in a while, had a few discussions. Where do you run up a $1.5 million bill and negotiate down to $800,000+? I mean, that's unreasonable. So I thought the judge would hammer us a little bit and then at least see that part of this story as being unreasonable and make a decision. Didn't happen. It's a long shot, but that was the thinking behind it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And Judge, we'll give you the last word.
There's a very fundamental misconception here, and I don't fault the mayor for having it. He wasn't advised. That's the only thing I can conclude. We had a 7-day trial on a preliminary injunction. It's interlocutory. Nothing is binding for the future. We were set for a jury trial. I wasn't going to be the trier of fact. The jurors established the facts. They determine and make the decisions. I wouldn't have been involved in making any more decisions in that case. The jury would have decided. And so, unfortunately, the mayor misunderstood and didn't have the facts.
Well,
one more.
Well, the thing is, well, we all know that a judge has control of a courtroom and the proceedings, and there's a lot of things that a judge can do to manipulate if one is given to having a predisposition on an issue. Not that I'm saying that Judge Wanger. I started to call you Governor Wanger. I almost did.
You're the one with aspirations.
No, well,
I'm as far as I'm concerned.
I just want to go back to making bad movies, Judge. Thank you all for
It was a lot of fun. Good to see you.